Today's episode, we talk about Red River Shootout, why Miami won't take a knee, Alabama's back, USC survives, here comes Louisville, what the hell is going on in Iowa? We do that every episode. What a show. Please continue listening.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It is a fraud. It's a cheat. The National Park Service and Preserve up there are trying to knock 747 down. They're biased against 747. The refs are crooked.
Russ Dellinger.
Man, Alabama is like its quarterback in a lot of ways as a team. They are just it's absurdly inconsistent, up and down, roller coaster.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Here's why people look for the $8 million coach. Because they can do things like what Jeff Brohm is doing at Louisville.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And that was one hell of a week six.
Woo!
From noon to 2:30 a.m. Eastern. We start with Red River. We end with a triple overtime. USC outlasts Arizona. In between, there is literally everything.
Yeah.
Comebacks, blown leads, dancing dinosaurs in Ames.
The little dinosaurs were amazing. I just kept watching the video and repeat.
They're fun. They're fun. Dancing T-Rexes. We'll get to that. It all there. But look, our ethos is negativity. Our ethos is negativity. We're not good people.
No.
We like to laugh at the failures of others. And there was no more failure. Look, I mean, we're going to get to Red River Shootout and the others. But there's a Red River Shootout every year. Never before have I seen a coach, have I seen a college football program have a lead with the clock ticking. 3rd and 10. You have the lead. You have the ball. There is under 40 seconds left in the game. You have to snap the ball. Snap the ball. Take a knee. You're shaking hands by the 22-second mark.
Yeah.
Mario Cristobal, innovator. The innovative offensive mind of Mario Cristobal and the Miami Hurricanes say, no, 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 we're not taking a knee. Let's run the ball. They ran the ball. They gave the ball to Donald Chaney to run it. He gets through the line and then fumbles because that's what happens when the entire Georgia Tech team is trying to strip you. Georgia Tech gets the ball back with 25 seconds left. All they had to do was take a knee. You're undefeated. You're going to play North Carolina next week. Battle of undefeated teams. Primetime ABC. Is the U back? All the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
How hard is it to take a knee? There are no plays I could do in Division I football, except that one, maybe.
Dan, it's pretty easy to take a knee. I can take a knee right here, right now.
You got to get the snap. You do have to get the snap.
I'm taking a knee.
You're taking a knee? Right okay, now. Take a
I'm
knee.
In the hotel room.
Take a knee, and you win the game. Run the ball. No, you do not. And credit to Georgia Tech. Haynes King, the old Texas A&M quarterback, makes two big-time throws, big-time plays. He just gets one over to Malik Rutherford to get into Miami territory, and then he hits Christian Leary in another coaching blunder.
Just
let's not have a deep, deep safety. Like,
don't let anybody get behind you. Lord.
And if they do, if somehow that happens, interfere with them. Knock them down. Take them out.
Just push them. Yeah.
What is Ed Reed doing watching his program?
Oh, my God.
As he sees no safety. Yeah. No. And in walks Christian Leary for the game-winning touchdown with 1 second left. Easily the worst loss I've ever seen. Afterward, Cristobal, we should have taken a knee.
Oh, really?
I'm not going to make an excuse for it. I should have stepped in and has said, hey, take a knee. Further, he said, the drive, it was going to be at 157, and we ran it about 127 off. Then it was recalibrated, he said. We should have taken a timeout there at the end. I thought we'd get first down. We talked about two hands on the ball, but that's not good enough. Should have told them to take a knee. That's it. Fumbled the ball at the 25. They went 75 yards in two plays, so no excuses.
No.
Just for clarification, reporters. But just for clarification.
Yeah.
It was third and 10.
Could you imagine the press conference? Yeah.
It was third and 10. So you're saying you could have gotten the first down? Is that why you did it? And then by this point, I think
didn't need to get the first down.
No. Quote, we should have taken a knee.
It's amazing. It's just incredible.
And again, like, Mario Cristobal is getting paid $8 million. He has a staff of who knows how many. You can't tell me that somebody over there isn't on the headset or in front of Mario or whatever screaming, take the knee. And all you got to do, the video's still out there from Herm Edwards picking up Joe Pisarcik's fumble in the 1970s, and that's what started the whole take a knee thing. When there's like one way you can lose only, and that's if you try to run an actual play and you drop the ball or the ball is taken from you and the other team gets it. That's why this became the only way to finish a game is to not do no harm to yourself. Do no harm to your chance of winning. And they somehow did it. And this is not Mario Cristobal's first rodeo.
Mm-mm.
When he was at Oregon and they were playing Stanford and they were late in the game, they could have run out the clock. They had a running back who was fighting for extra yardage on a handoff that he shouldn't have gotten. And he fumbled, and Stanford went down and won. And you would think if that happened once in your career, it would never happen again. And now it's happened twice. And people thought that Mario Cristobal was the savior at Miami. Well, they were 5-7 last year, right? And you blow a game like that with a team that's pretty good. Wow, that's bad.
So quick story. I'm in College Station, and last night I happened to at 10 o'clock find a restaurant still open, and sat up at the bar and asked them to put on the Miami Georgia Tech game. They did, and then for whatever reason, with like 50 seconds in the game, they turned the game off. So I hurriedly got my iPad out and just in time opened my iPad to YouTube TV, and the play happened, the kneel down play happened. And let me quote Tim Hasselbeck, the ACC network analyst on the game. As Miami breaks the huddle and the time ticks under 40 seconds, and they ended up snapping it with 34 seconds left. Again, college play clock, 40 seconds, so didn't need to do that. And Tim Hasselbeck says, just take a knee. You should not be handing the football off. I don't know what Miami is doing. And then, of course, when Georgia Tech moves down the field and scores the touchdown, Hasselbeck says, it needs to be said. That's one of the biggest coaching mistakes at this level I have ever seen in my lifetime. It was just hard to believe. I looked up at one point, and the bartender at this bar was looking at me like, is something wrong with you? I think my jaw was just hanging down. I just could not believe it. Just amazing.
Yeah, and you're not even a Miami fan.
No. Yeah. It's just a crime.
Oh, I can't imagine a Miami fan. And it was, and you know, I know people that listen to the pod, I think, like an insight into our lives as sports writers. And here's something. I was literally about to push book on the trip to North Carolina, Miami, an undefeated showdown to go cover that game, and instead booked a Seattle trip to cover Miami or to cover Washington, Oregon. Just crazy. This game.
That's I was sitting in the post game interview room in Louisville. We were waiting for Jeff Brohm to come in, and Rick Bozich and I were making a list of all the unbeaten teams, and we put Miami on there. And then somebody comes running in the room and said, Miami just lost. You're not going to believe it. And then we're all like, what? How'd that happen? And we looked it up. It's like, oh, my God.
A couple more quotes. This one from Brent Key, the Georgia Tech coach. Yeah, we kind of felt that he was going to take a knee at that point. He didn't, though. there was questions where they're trying to get the running back 100 yards. They denied that. Fans are calling him Mario Kneel the Ball. Others are equating it to hitting on 21 in blackjack. Saw that somewhere. There was no confusion, Mario said. We were moving the pile. We had a pretty good drive going. I'm not going to make an excuse for it and say we should have done this or that. That's it. We should have done it. Sometimes you get carried away when they just finish the game and run it. But I should have stepped in and said, hey, take a knee. I guess it's a different version of the quote I had earlier.
Yeah. He is the boss. He can step in. He can call the play.
You have a chart. You have a chart.
Yeah.
This is what you do in like
staff when, and charts yeah. and everything else.
What do your 100 analysts do right. in yeah. May? They come yeah. up with charts that look like that's why they're always holding those things. And there's a guy who runs. Now take a knee here. Oh wait, we need timeouts. We need to have the QB take the snap, step back, burn 3 seconds, take a knee. Then yeah. we'll get out of there, right?
But right. you don't even do you. I mean, think
no,
about
this is
it.
Simple.
You
would, this is simple.
Yeah, I mean, like they broke the huddle under 40 seconds on as the time yeah. is ticking down. The play clock is 40 seconds. I look at the clock and then the play clock, and it's pretty easy. The chart. I'm sure it's something used right when the drive begins or whatever, but like I just don't know. And then they panned to Mario and some assistants on the sideline, got the headset on, and he's looking out in the field, and the time is just 38, 37, 36, and they get to the line of scrimmage, and also let me say this too. They're motioning. I don't know if you guys noticed, like that last play. They're motioning people. They're in the shotgun. It's just like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Stop thinking. Stop thinking so much. Snap the ball, take a knee. I can't tell you. I don't want to go too far off topic here, but in terms of thinking too much, I don't know how many times just yesterday I saw teams get in third and one, fourth and one, and have to do like 3 shifts, 4 motions, and inevitably your dude's jumping off sides. You're false starting. I mean, the number of times that the more stuff you add to a pre-snap, in those situations, the more twitchy the linemen get, and there one of them goes, and you've screwed it up. Missouri, among others.
I'm going to jump this a little bit, but because it just fits. But like Alabama, on their final drive, they had the ball. They threw a pass when they could have taken a knee. They had Jalen Milroe threw a pass on 4th and 10.
No,
yeah, no, they had
what
to
was
throw
that.
That?
Why do they have to throw that?
They had to throw, Dan, because that was fourth down. So it would have been to turnover on downs.
No, not the last one. The first down on that. The last play, they were right. They were right to throw that pass. Yeah. That was good. Kill 7 seconds. Mm. That's what I always said. Well, I covered the Michigan State, Michigan. There's trouble with the snap. Remember, all Michigan has to do is kick the ball. And this kid in Australia like drops it, and it goes. All they need to do is have their QB run back, do what Milroe did, run a few yards, huck it as high as you can, and you're good. On first down, there, Milroe threw a pass and stopped the clock. That's why they were so out of sorts on all that. So it happens to the best of them, but it helps a little bit when you win the game and no one remembers, and you got 7 national titles. Mario Kneel the Ball. Not so good. Not so good. But let me just get, because we have so many games to get to, and then we'll get to Red River after this. Ross, you are at Alabama, Texas A&M. Alabama, huge win. They control the SEC West now. They still got LSU, but that defense is just terrible. Bama's back. They were gone for a minute. They're back. But that game could have been 3-touchdown victory if Alabama didn't keep shooting itself in his foot. And Saban said as much. It was like, what did he say? I've never won a game where I screwed up so much or something like that. Yeah. What was going on down there?
Yeah, it was wild. He, I rarely seen him. It was kind of like a hard to describe mood that he was in, because he wasn't like afterward, he wasn't like angry, right? He wasn't yelling and all that stuff. He was pretty calm, and he was just kind of like almost like smirking kind of the whole time, which he did when he walked off and he saw wife Terry Saban, and kind of like the almost like this, I can't believe we just won that game. How did we win that game? Kind of look on his face, kind of like, ha, we did it somehow, you know. But he came in the news conference, and the first thing he said was, well, "What do you guys want to talk about? The good or the bad news? Because we have a little of both." And then went on to say, "That was a record game for me when it comes to messing up and still winning." So think about it: 356 games that Nick Saban has been head coach in. In 200 and something wins, and that's the one. Yeah, man, Alabama is like its quarterback in a lot of ways as a team. They are just, it's absurdly inconsistent, up and down, roller coaster. Jalen Milroe missed an open receiver through, you know, then threw in this tight window for a touchdown. Next series, you know, he threw a horrible interception, and then, you know, found a guy open over the middle with a perfectly placed pass. It's incredible how inconsistent he is in the overall team is. But, man, when you are looking at it from an A&M perspective, golly, did you let one get away. You are – like, these are the games that you get paid $10 million to win. In Jimbo Fisher in a tie game – at the Alabama 45-yard line, decided not to go for it on 4th-and-1, punted. Alabama marched down the field to take the lead, and then late in the game, he decided to attempt a field goal on 4th-and-5, even though you're down a touchdown in the wanting minutes, and it was blocked. You're an A&M fan. You really let one get away, but this Alabama team's incredibly inconsistent, and until they get these mistakes fixed. And Nick Saban did, Dan, you know, I didn't even catch that about that first play of their last series, how they threw the ball. But that must be what Nick Saban was talking about, because he did mention we had all these penalties, we had turnovers, and we had poor late game clock management. And I remember thinking in the room, I wonder what he's talking about, and I just didn't go back. But that may be what he's talking about. We've seen that from Alabama, right, before this year a few times. So you're gonna have to take what I think everybody's gonna have to realize this Alabama team just isn't like the others. It's not crisp, it's not perfect in any way, but it's gonna have to win ugly, and it did.
Yeah, certainly beats losing, because you move to the top of the SEC West, you're still in playoff contention, but 26 carries for 23 yards. And with an inconsistent quarterback, I mean, you know, like in times in the past, sometimes when Alabama hasn't had a Tua or a Mac Jones or Bryce Young or whatever, they often have just been able to say, we're just going to run the ball more. And this team can't run the ball all that well. They averaged 0.88 yards per rush. They averaged 2.9 yards per rush against Mississippi, 3.1 against Texas. So it's a struggle. Their defense is very good. It is very good. They have a lot of good players, and they do a lot of good things. But the best thing, to Saban's point, 14 penalties, 99 yards, the best thing they could say about yesterday is they won. And yes, A&M blew a heck of an opportunity there.
Yeah, the O-line is a real concern, right? Just to piggyback off of Pat, I mean, they can't open holes. And then they struggle pass blocking as well. I mean, what does it say that they made a mid-season offensive line? They had a new guard in there, I believe. They had a mid-season offensive line change, and their starting lineup says probably a lot.
I thought it was disappointing by A&M. I just thought they don't have their quarterback, which is, you know, obviously a huge, huge role in this. Max Johnson did okay, but yeah, they had opportunities. I thought they coached very conservatively. I mean, we got guys out here going for it, running the ball on 3rd and 10 with 30 seconds left, and I'm looking. The opposite of Mario Cristobal. Cristobal, all brakes, no gas. Coach, this is the Neil time. God, his thing.
Break code.
I thought it
break.
Was disappointing by A&M. And I don't know where this season goes. I don't know what they are. Mm. It was one of these classic A&M games that we've seen, other than the one time Manziel won that game at Bama. But like A&M, College Station's all dressed up. Everybody's there. It's Pat. I mean, Ross, you were there, right? Wild scene, 100,000. Yeah. Here we go. And it's just like, didn't happen. It's just like, I don't know what it is about the pro. It's just like, here we go. This is your shot. Bama's on the ropes. They're not doing all these things. They're giving you opportunities.
Yeah.
And you lost by 6. You probably should have lost by 14. And now you're at Tennessee. You still got to go to at Ole Miss, and you got to go to at LSU. And I have a feeling this season is not going to just tank or soar. And they're going to be sitting there going, damn, what do we do now?
A little bit of a story on the Jimbo, and that was obviously a big topic after the game, in the press box chatter and below at press conferences, is Jimbo and the situation with him and his contract and just all that stuff. I mean, you know, again, A&M, his buyout is around $70 million. But we were finishing up Alabama interviews, and they took place kind of in the just open concourse of the stadium outside of the Alabama locker room. And at some point, somebody points behind me and says, "Oh my God, look." And I turn around, and there's this man. He's got a bag on his head, the spit bag, as Dan mentioned to me in the text last night. He's handcuffed, and sheriff's deputies are loading him into a van. He looks like a terrorist suspect. He's loaded into a van. And I tweeted the picture out, and all the replies are A&M fans saying, "Ah, look, we finally got rid of Jimbo." So that is probably the sentiment here in College Station.
There was, don't spit on the guys. There was about a million arrests. Somebody sent me the police blotter from A&M. It was pretty funny. Drunken fan, section 232. It's hot and all that. You have something there, Pat? It's hot. They were drinking.
It's hot and all that. It wasn't hot as it. Man, it was like 75 and sunny.
Well, they got no excuse. Hold your liquor, Aggies. Hold your liquor.
By the way, this was the first game I've attended at A&M's to have Kyle Field, I think, in about 5 years since it had a lot of the new renovations. Man, it is just incredible. It is crazy how big it looks, how close you are to the field. It is incredible, and it was in a wild environment, and yeah, I could see where there would be quite a bit.
What gets me about
rest.
Kyle Field and the size. So there are bigger stadiums, but like even the Horseshoe, the Big House, certainly those are dug in to the ground somewhere.
Right.
Horseshoe didn't used to be, but then they took out the track and added it, so it's huge. And the Horseshoe, you walk up to it, you're like, "What the hell?" Michigan Stadium, you walk up and you're like, "What is the like?" Doesn't look that big. Then you walk in and you're like, "Oh my goodness." But those are not surrounded by any buildings. Like Kyle Field is just kind of right there in the middle of the campus. So it's just astoundingly large. And they built out, like they have all their offices, and it's just like, oh my goodness.
They're built out and up. It is so vertical, and it's right on top of the field.
Vertical.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Impressive place.
And like, it's pretty flat around there, and all of a sudden it's like, ga-ga!
There's that flat. Too, right?
Yeah,
it's not, and there aren't any other skyscrapers. Like even in Columbus, you're like, well, there's downtown, there's actual buildings here in Columbus. All right, Red River Shootout should have led with this, but we had the other thing. And listen, Oklahoma, Texas, understand how the SEC works. I don't care what you do; we're contractually obligated to talk to Alabama first. Learn the rules. Learn the rules. Nice win, Boomer, but Alabama won also. Roll Tide won. We have to talk. I don't make the rules. I just don't want to get thrown in a prison in like Hoover, Alabama, because I did it wrong. There's like a media prison. You think I'm kidding.
Yeah, we get the rules actually from Dear Leader Sankey at the beginning of every season.
They go over it at SEC Media Day. Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry. Alabama also won. Coach Nick needs a little publicity. No. All right. Boomer, Sooner, unbelievable game. Unbelievable victory for Oklahoma. It was great. It was great. Texas is down and out. They're down 27. You're never out in this game. Down 27-17. They score three of their next four drives to take a 30-27 lead. But the one they don't score, they get stuffed four times from the 1-yard line in an epic all-timer of a goal line stand. Granted, they ran Jonathan Brooks three consecutive plays. But, hey, I don't know what they're trying to do. Questionable play calling, but, hey, when at least you didn't kneel the ball, right? At least you weren't Mario kneel the ball. So Sark gets a little bit of a thing. Incredible. That pretty much won him the game. But still, Texas has the lead. They're going to win. OU is reeling. They hadn't done anything since the opening drive in the second half. And then Dylan Gabriel, five plays, 75 yards, 1 minute and 2 seconds, finds Nick Anderson open in the back. After some defensive confusion, Hail Mary gets knocked down. Oklahoma wins a massive game, massive statement game. They may run this back up in Jerry World in about 2 months, but on Saturday, it was all Boomer Sooner and all that. All right, I want to get Ross's opinion right now on what happened.
Wow. That was a roller coaster right there, man. That was tough, man. Left him too much time on the clock at the end, didn't we? Hell of a game, man. Hats off to OU. Team came out on the front foot. Great emotional football they played. Well played, Sooner.
All right, we're going to have a new game. Is it Ross or is it Matthew McConaughey?
You son of a... All right.
Hell of a
I don't
game,
think it's
man.
A bad. I don't Hell think it's much of an insult to compare you to like no. this massive movie star, the yeah. Minister of Culture, Ross. What did happen?
Shoot,
the real Ross. See. Please stand up.
Yeah. Long story, but I had to leave at halftime. But I did catch the first half, which was wild. The first 6 minutes of the game, I think, had just as much action as any full game. It was incredible and just an awesome environment and. It was wild. So I had to watch.
You were there with
my...
Greg Sankey. You spent the day with
yeah.
SEC.
Yeah, a little tag along with Greg. Yeah, so we had to leave at halftime to make it to A&M, Alabama, which I stayed for the full game there. We made it probably like 3 minutes into kickoff at A&M, Alabama. We made it. But yeah, I had to leave at halftime of the Texas-Oklahoma game. But we were kind of following along with it and getting updates and
private jet down there
to get from Dallas to College Station,
it's a long drive.
Yeah, it's a long drive. So yeah, we had to use the skies.
So you're private jetting. I think you were hanging out with Ted Cruz again. You go to two games in one day. You know, I watched some of the game at BW3s in Royal Oak, Michigan. So I thought very similar experience. No. All right. For those of us who watched the game, Pat, what happened? Ross was too. He's jet setting.
He's jet setting.
And then he's upset. We're comparing him to McConaughey. He's such a celebrity. He hasn't had a big movie in a little while. Can we get a little better than that?
So, yes, I it's funny that Ross is kind of reluctantly acknowledging the private jet part of this, which I did a similar trip with Mike Slive, actually. I did two of them, and it was like, you know, the two things they really didn't like you talking about were the private jet and then the police escorts from the stadium or from the airport.
We did
stadium.
Not have a police escort.
Oh, okay. Man really? Of the people. Yeah. Man of the people, okay. Ross Dellinger. Yeah.
You know why? Because every cop was already at the stadium.
Well, that's true. All the sheriff's deputies, everybody's at the game. Everybody's at the game.
Yeah.
So a note about that, about all of this is that a one Greg Sankey, I think this is like the fourth time in 6 weeks or third time in 6 weeks of this year that he did two games in one day. And the way the SEC's footprint is, right, you can do that and drive it, which he did all the previous ones. He actually drives quite a bit, and he does normally take commercial flights. But because of personal things he had, he had to attend a wedding in Austin, a friend's wedding. He needed to take other means, and the games were so close together. So, hey, there's a reason for everything, Dan.
This is so funny because, like, Roger Goodell apologizes for this.
I know. Right?
You think I'm flying Spirit? What the hell are you talking about, Roger damn Goodell?
The main reason there's a reason for this is because they got the money to do it. So good.
What the hell?
I do not blame or fault anybody from the SEC for getting on the private jet. Do it. Wish I could. No, it was a fantastic Red River game. Outstanding. And I've got to say, hats off to Oklahoma because they just rose up and really, really wanted to win that game. I mean, they competed hard as heck. They were knocking the hell out of Texas from the opening possession. They were on it. They were inspired. They were locked in. They were prepared. And they executed. And they still almost lost. It took Dylan Gabriel just having that phenomenal drive at the end. I do think the goal line stand kind of encapsulated how much they wanted it. And there have been times in recent years I thought Texas wanted it more, and it showed. They would win a game as, you know, as an underdog. But I think Oklahoma's like, we're not losing two in a row to these guys, and showed up absolutely locked in. For Texas, you know, what's been probably the biggest theme of the early part of this season for Texas, we are tougher. We are bigger and stronger and tougher. And you get stuffed at the one-yard line like they did. That was a repudiation of Texas being back in that area, at least. Anyway, it was a fantastic game, and that's what that rivalry is and can be, and why it's just so fun. I'm sure the stadium was equal parts just delirious and just distraught at the end of that thing.
I think that what I find interesting is this idea that, I mean, Brent Venables put 49 zip. There's one way to put 49 zip behind you. That's it. Win yep. that game, win that way. This is a more balanced team. This is a good defensive team. I mean, they gave up points, but Red River, this, I always felt like OU would win a game like 51-48. And it was just like, they liked winning it under Lincoln Riley. And it was exciting. And they had Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Caleb Williams. They had all these QBs and they're doing something different. But like, this was OU football. I mean, the most violent man on man, hardcore football drill there is called the Oklahoma drill. Yeah. You line up and you pound each other. I don't think they do it anymore.
Made illegal.
But they did And like Pop Warner, 10 years old, Oklahoma drill, right? Mm-hmm. You're smashing each other. That's what you did. So it's like there was this bit. And look, things can change and you can win. We're going to get to Lincoln Riley. But like, instead of like, I don't know, they won this game with like on the last second play and they needed this drive and all that, but it wasn't like, oh my God, we're so lucky. Our defense sucks. Thank God we can score so many points. This was a team game. Both sides had something to point to. There was just something in the DNA, and I'm saying it can't change, of Oklahoma fandom that's like, that's right.
Yeah.
First and goal on the one, we stuffed them. And I said the other day, they tackle well. I didn't look up the stats on missed tackles, but they did a really good job against a very elusive Texas skill players. Quinn Ewers, good game, not great. Like, I'm wondering, is this a side thing we can talk later on, but is Quinn Ewers really going pro after this year? Like, I don't know. Why does the broadcast never mention Arch Manning? Did the Manning's decree, no one talks about him? Am I going to get put in the jail? I'm going to get put in like a New Orleans jail now for this. Arch Manning doesn't exist.
Preseason note that came down from Omaha Productions. We're not talking
mention. I'm not saying they should have played Arch Manning yesterday. I'm not. But it's like, there's just never a word about him. Arch on the team. I mean, this was the big thing. Anyway, this is what Oklahoma wants to be. They're 6-0. This is lined up well. These two teams just need not to screw up the rest of the way. I mean, it's wide open. K-State's out there, but they just lost. This should happen, and you get the rematch. And I think if Texas beats Oklahoma at the end of the year and comes back on it, the likelihood of making the playoff is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously,
especially if Bama keeps rolling because they got
this stuff will play out. It will play out. We'll see. You're not guaranteed, but you're not dead yet. But you can't have one of these. Well, we're gonna, you know, they're at Houston next week. They can't fall. BYU can't clip them in 2 weeks. All the different things that can happen. So it's all there. But I just feel like this OU. This is what Oklahoma wants to be. Gritty, gutty. Great game, great offense, great defense. At the end, they just had a little bit more tenacity. And I think that's what Brent Venables was trying to build here. And maybe he's built it in year two, which is when a lot of great coaches through the years make major moves, right? Like Stoops won in his second year, national title. Urban Meyer won in his second year. Usually by year two, you know if you got a guy.
Yeah.
And Others did it. Someone else who won in a second year, but whatever.
Saban won his third year, but his second year was really good.
Second year.
Pete Carroll got it going. Guys got things going quick. By that second year, you're like, all right, here we go. Maybe you need another piece, maybe this or that. But to me, this is OU football is back. They only had one bad year. They're always good. They were good under Lincoln Riley. I'm not kidding. But the whole hysteria that Lincoln Riley left and, oh, my God, screw him. And let's name water treatment plants after him. And, like, remember that some desolate highway and the politicians, you're going to get taxed too much and all the hatred. You're fine, man. You're OU. You got a good coach looking right now.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to add real quick on that game and on Texas, part of their thing, you know, we're big and we're physical, is goal line package. We're going to bring in Tavondre Sweat, their nose tackle, who is 6'4", 360. And they brought in another jumbo defensive guy. It's like, just because you put the biggest guys on the roster on the field doesn't mean they're going to block someone or block the right person. And Oklahoma, and I'm not saying it's their fault. Those two guys might have done their assignments well, but Oklahoma's got guys just knifing around the big guys to make those tackles at the goal line. So bigger is not always better unless bigger knows what it's doing.
All right. Unbelievable. We got one more we absolutely have to get to, and that is the Louisville performance. Pat, you were at that game. Spirited performance by the Fighting Brahms. What was the final? 33-20.
Yep.
Okay, but they really manhandled Notre Dame. They had it won the whole fourth quarter. It was just a big party. This was defense to me all the way. They held Notre Dame to 44 yards on 28 carries, 1.6 yards a carry. That'll do it. Then Sam Hartman, 22 of 38, 254, two TDs, three picks, and five sacks. He was absolutely harassed. TJ Quinn, Raymond Perrier, Ashton Gillette, these guys just peeled back their ears and dominated the Notre Dame offensive line. I think that's where the game was. Hartman wasn't good. Hartman's not as good as I thought. I was wrong. I got completely blindsided early in the year. I was swayed and swooned by the 1970s yacht rock beard. I admit it. He's still handsome. He's still handsome, Sam Hartman, but not as good as I was predicting. Notre Dame now 3-2, kind of limping into this USC game to get another massive game. Although if Hartman can't light that team up, forget about it. Pat, what was it like in Louisville? It looked absolutely wild in a town that knows how to do wild.
It was wild. It was wild. Big field storm afterwards. And, you know, I filed my column and left at roughly 1 a.m., maybe a little bit later than that. And plenty of people still out in the parking lot going hard. And it was kind of a chilly night. But it was, that Louisville is here. Here's why people look for the $8 million coach. Because they can do things like what Jeff Brohm is doing at Louisville. I mean, they were an okay team last year. And Scott Satterfield did the program a massive favor by going to Cincinnati, taking a lateral move out of a job where he was under some pressure but was not going to get fired. And all of a sudden, the avenue is open for the most obvious hire in college football history. Bring Jeff Brohm home. Louisville native, former Louisville player. His brothers, former Louisville players. His dad, former Louisville player. It's the job he wants. And he comes in, hits the portal extremely well strategically. Quarterback Jack Plummer comes in. Receiver Jamari Thrash. Offensive lineman they identified after spring practice. We need some help there. They get him. And puts out a high-functioning, competent, physical, explosive team on the field against, I'm sorry, Marcus Freeman. Look, I'm not saying the verdict is in on Marcus Freeman. We were saying after last year, we don't know. I'm saying we still don't know whether Marcus Freeman can do the job. There's a little bit more returns, and the returns are not great. But I did the statistics on it. All of Notre Dame's great coaches, winning percentage over 70, right? They win more than 70% of their game. All of their bad coaches that they had to fire, get rid of after 3 to 5 years, below 60%. Marcus Freeman, 0.667. He's in the middle. He's just okay. He's pretty good. He's not terrible. He's not great. And so Notre Dame is wrestling with that. But that's when you see Jeff Brohm take a Louisville to 6-0 in his first year, and Marcus Freeman, with a lot of built-in advantages and program momentum when he took over, have Notre Dame at 5-2. That looks like a coaching mismatch to me. So a lot of credit to Louisville, a extremely fun atmosphere there, and a lot of questions for Notre Dame.
Bourbon was flowing, Pat?
Oh, it was flowing hard. Not for me personally, but
pregame?
It was not.
No. You get last call at Kearns. Did you get to Kearns for last call?
Didn't even make it to Kearns. No.
Went home like a good boy.
I am working like a dog for Sports Illustrated out there, baby. I came home and I had two beers watching the USC Freak Show between 1:45 and 2:30.
All right. I agree. We'll talk more about Notre Dame and all that. They got more big games coming up. They look kind of exhausted, but.
They've been through a run now. That's three straight games against undefeated ranked teams. And
Louisville,
the first two went down to the wire.
Louisville's going to make this interesting, though. If that defense plays with that kind of fight and that kind of motor, look out. They are very, very good. All right, let's talk about the USC freak show, as you call it.
Yes.
I mean, it's just simply too many games. This thing ends in the middle of the night. Yeah. Arizona takes a 17-0 lead. USC rolls back, gets it 17-14 at the half, but they just never got their off. It looked like we're off to the races. This thing's going to be, 42-24 or something like that. They never quite get that offense going. Caleb Williams was 14-25 for 219, one TD, took four sacks. He had run for three touchdowns, so we'll give him that. And he was the key to this game. But it ends up 28-28 in the final minute of regulation. Pat, describe this last minute, the second worst botch job of the week.
Yeah. Let's just say that Lincoln Riley's happy for two things. He has Caleb Williams and Mario Cristobal exists. Otherwise, we would have been talking about him botching this game as an undefeated team. So here's what happens. It's a tie game late, 28-28. USC's defense is garbage as usual, but the offense is on the field, and Caleb Williams takes them down, and they get first and goal at the Arizona 6 with 24 seconds left. They've got a timeout in the back pocket. All you want to do, center the ball, basically, get it where your kicker wants it in the middle of the field, call timeout after that play, bring the kicker out, win the game. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. That's a little too much. We need a little Hollywood script twist here. So first down, Caleb Williams throws a pass out to Brendan Rice. Brendan Rice certainly seems shocked. The Arizona defensive back seems shocked. He's like, okay, I'm just going to be ready to get blocked here. And then, if the Arizona DB had not been so shocked, he might have gone pick six with that thing. I mean, Caleb Williams just throws it out there, up for grabs, incomplete. So it's like, cannot believe they ran that play. Surely the next play, center the ball, take a knee, bring on the kicker. Oh, no, 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 no. USC, we're going to do a handoff. Caleb Williams tries to do a handoff, botches it, drops the ball, has to dive on the ball. Unbelievable. And then they've still got that timeout in the back pocket. They're running around up to the line like, spike, spike, spike. It's like, no, you don't have to spike the ball. You've got a timeout. And finally, they called the timeout with 2 seconds left. Bring out the kicker. Bad angle. And then the snapper snaps the thing like, about 4.5 feet in the air. So the holder has to stand up to catch it and then squats. Kind of like he would be sitting on the pot to put the ball down for the kicker. Timing is completely screwed up. Kicker stops, starts, kicks it like directly into somebody right in front of him. And they're going to overtime in a game that never should have gone to overtime. And then they barely pull it out, mostly because Caleb Williams, again, is Caleb Williams, including the winning play was a stupid gimmick by USC where they line up, with like four guys in the middle of the field. This is when you got to go for two.
Yeah.
And line up with you know, four guys in the middle of the field and then all the offensive line over to the side, and Williams is under pressure, but he's fast and tough and he gets around the corner and scores. But I mean, again, probably shouldn't have had to come down to like, that's your 2-point play, really? But that's what they did.
The lack of defense is astounding. Jed Fish at Arizona, they got the ball. USC scores, kicks an extra point. Arizona scores. You go take the two, go for two. Don't stay in this game. You hadn't scored in a long time. You don't play roulette here with Caleb Williams, right? But he doesn't. And then later we find out probably why. They have no good 2-point plays that can work. He failed on all of them. So maybe he was right. Because they got him at like second and like 14 or like 19 or something at the. They pushed him back on that second overtime. Anyway, USC survives, but they're going into Notre Dame wobbly. That Notre Dame USC game looked like a monster 2 weeks ago. Now they're a little bit wobbly on it. So I don't know what the Trojans do.
Both those teams are, I think, probably going to be a little tapped out for that game. We'll see who can rise to the occasion.
Such a hold my beer situation. Like, it's almost like Lincoln Riley was watching Miami and then said, "Ooh, you know what? Let me try to do that."
Yeah, I got to do that. All right. We have a couple more. We're not going to get to everything today. This was a wild day. Our Iowa update. Hawkeyes win 20-14 against Purdue. My Purdue probation is over, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I did my week. I'm going to extend it another day. I won't say too much bad, but you should have won this game. They're averaging 21.8 points a game. Brian Ferentz, offensive coordinator, needs 25 to keep his contract and 7 wins. They're at 21.8, but here's the thing. They're 5-1. He needs 27.7 the rest of the way. The stats on this are just mind-boggling, okay? Deacon Hill, their quarterback, granted backup quarterback, Cade McNamara is injured, lost for the season. 6-for-21 for 110 with one touchdown. Five of the completions went to Eric All, their tight end, who transferred with McNamara from Michigan. Liked All, and you can see McNamara. I don't know how it went down, right? But you can see All and McNamara sitting around Ann Arbor, I don't know, whatever, at some like lunch place or bar, whatever they're doing, is sitting around going, we're a little deep on the debt. Let's go to Iowa. They suck on offense. We ought to be the star. Right? Like, that's how the transfer portal really works. Like, do you see how bad Iowa is? We ought to be able to make that team, right? We'll be the starters. Anyway, Eric All catches 5 of the 6 passes. The other goes to Caleb Johnson, their running back, who is good. 134 yards rushing. Iowa did not complete a pass to a wide receiver.
I mean,
how?
These are like service academy stats, but Iowa's not running a service academy offense.
A tough week in the wide receiver room. What game film are you breaking down here?
Good luck in recruiting. Boy, that's not going to be used against you. Hey, there was a game this year where, hey, receiver recruit, there was a game this year where Iowa didn't complete a single pass to your position group.
We just block. That's a tough film watch in the old receiver room. Like, don't they usually, like, position rooms will have, like, little awards for their guys, like player of the week or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, we didn't catch any this week. Maybe next week. Maybe next week. Iowa is the most entertainingly bad team ever. This entire game had a combined. We talked about last week, Ole Miss scored 706 yards against LSU by itself. This game had a combined 634 total yards. Iowa had 12 offensive first downs. Anyway, they won. They're 5-1. They're at Wisconsin. We'll talk about this later, but they have a chance of winning the Big Ten West, or what I'm calling the MAC Plus. They can win 10 or 11 games.
The MAC with better facilities.
Yeah, good facility MAC. Weight room MAC. Children of the Corn in the Big Ten West. Just horrible. I mean, you see Minnesota against Michigan. Look, Michigan's defense is great. I think they're dominating. I think our Diag partners stat of the week, Custom Staffing Solutions, was that Michigan has not allowed a a snap inside their 10-yard line all season.
Yeah.
Wow.
No one is now. They're really? Giving some touchdowns up, but they, no one's had a snap. Pretty good one.
Wow.
Minnesota opens with a pick six, right? Like, big day. Here we go. We got Michigan in. Let's go. Pick six. Okay, great. Game over. Anyway, there was a pregame concert. We talked about Van Halen, the Iowa band Van Halen. There's also another kind of celebrity singer there called Hawkeye Elvis. He dresses in a Elvis costume. They joined forces for a tailgate concert.
What? Van Halen and Hawkeye Elvis?
Hawkeye Elvis singing lead for Van Halen.
Like, oh, God.
I don't know what. And then you had the Iowa State incident over in Ames, where you have they play the Jurassic Park theme song and they bring out like 50 costume dinosaurs to do a dance. So what the hell was that? I don't know, but it was highly entertaining.
It was awesome, Dan.
It was awesome. Who doesn't like 50 costume T-Rex in a synchronized dance? The little arms, like you can't do a whole lot. That's the problem. They have the little arms. Then
T-Rex arms.
They come out in these uniforms, Iowa State.
Oh, man.
The pants are like the old Crayola flesh-covered color. Yeah, we know that's not everyone's flesh color, but it looks on TV like no one's wearing pants. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is in the sweet corn? Did they all give up producing corn? They're just growing weed now? Is that what they're doing? What is happening in Iowa?
I don't know.
But just vast marijuana fields. They're like, we're done with corn. There's way more money in this.
Yeah. Way more money. And we're just going to go straight, actually psychedelic through the football season, both Iowa and Iowa State. It's incredible.
I simply cannot. I don't know. But anyway, that's what was going on there. Before we get to our awards, I have a massive scandal going on in Fat Bear Week. Massive scandal. I have big issues with this national. What is it? The Katani or whatever?
Katmai
National Park. You guys are cheating.
Do tell.
Katmai National Park. Oh yeah, my bear, 747, was going up against Chunk. A formidable. I have nothing against Chunk. Nothing against Chunk. Chunk's a formidable competitor through the years, in the Elite Eight here. And we go up against them, 747 and Chunk, and it's by vote. That's how you advance in the poll. And they put two photos, and 747's picture is from the side, and Chunk's is angled, so you really see the girth of Chunk. It's not fair. You got to have the same picture. You got to have the same picture angle. It is a fraud. It's a cheat. The National Park Service and Preserve up there are trying to knock 747 down. They're biased against 747. Mm-hmm. The refs are crooked. The league office is crooked. The whole thing. And so,
You're saying is 747 lost.
Actually, it was Grazer. Did they play? It was Grazer. Is it Grazer?
Wait a minute.
No, Grazer. I'm sorry, not Chunk. Chunk beat somebody else. Chunk beat Spring Club. Grazer. Okay, 747. Defending champ. It spent all summer. I feel bad for 747. Eating salmon. And catching salmon and eating berries and stuff, whatever the hell they do. Grazer beats them 66,000 votes to 9,000. 747 smoked. Only 9,000 votes because of the photo.
Oh, man, please. All I know is Dan Wetzel lost Fat Bear Week, period. That's cheated. All I heard out of all that. I heard a lot of excuse making. I heard a lot of bitterness. Bottom line, that's an L for Dan Wetzel.
Take a knee. Take a knee. We shouldn't have even entered. We're just going to come down there and the refs are going to cheat us. 747 cheated. League office, they're so biased. They all went to Bama or something. Anyway, Final Four is Chunk versus 901 that somehow doesn't have a name. 901 destroyed Otis. And then Grazer and Holly. So one of you guys picked Holly, didn't you?
I think I did.
Well, you ought to have a little pride in your bear, okay? Anyway.
I'm Chunk. I'm disappointed right now.
Chunk is in the final. Sean's in the final four.
Yeah. I'm disappointed in Electra. She let me down. But I'm not blaming the league office. I'm blaming my bear.
Electra lost to Bucky Dent. Bucky got crushed by Holly. You didn't get anywhere. You picked like Middle Tennessee. Like, yeah, cute story for a little while.
So is my girl still alive or not?
Who is it?
Holly.
Holly, yeah, in the final four against Grazer.
All right. Gone.
Grazer, though, has got this picture. Grazer's going to win. Grazer's got this.
Boo hiss.
The picture angle.
The picture angle. The people vote. I mean, it's not even close. You look and you go, right. Yeah, that's way.
Here's an easy way to solve this. You wade out there into the marsh with these.
Get a better photo.
Bears.
Pick your own damn photo.
Come on. I expect more out of this Katmai National Preserve. You got all year. We don't pay any attention to you. What are you doing all year? 51 weeks. We don't care what you're doing up there. We don't care.
They're taking care of nature.
Get some better photos. Stay away from the Bears. All right. That's it. Heisman goes out at the end of the year. We like to give it out every week. Pat, you have a small sample Heisman.
No.
Okay. Ross.
I got.
Ross, you got a small sample Heisman.
I've got one. Noah Fifita, redshirt freshman Arizona quarterback. If you watch that ridiculous triple overtime game, you saw him completely shred through the USC defense, as many do, actually. But it was really impressive. 303 yards, 5 touchdowns. He 25 of 35. Made some really, really fun to watch. Just fun to watch. And he's replacing Jaden Delora, also a fun quarterback to watch, who's out with a lower leg injury. But I wanted to also, in combination with this, just talk about Arizona, because, man, have they been just close to turning this thing around. Jed Fish seems like he's got Arizona in the right direction. They almost came back and won at Mississippi State earlier. They kept pace with Washington last week. And then there was this over USC, gave him an incredible game. And if they had a little better two-point conversion plays, maybe they win. Or if they had gone for a two-point conversion in the first overtime. You know, it's usually like you're on the road, right, and you're a big underdog, and you go for the win. So I thought Arizona might go for the two-point conversion in the first overtime. But anyway, give it up to Noah and in Arizona there, that he gets my small sample for this week.
All right, I got somebody now. And frankly, he may not be the best player in America, but he's darn close. And he's proved it the last 3 weeks in a row. Brock Bowers, Georgia tight end. Kentucky coming in undefeated, ranked number 20. A lot of people, including myself, thought, oh, this is going to be the game where Kentucky really pushes Georgia. Oh, no. No, no, no. Georgia looked like Georgia. Georgia rose up and smashed Kentucky 51-13, 34-7 at halftime. And Brock Bowers, again, was a big part of that. His last three games, he's caught 24 passes, 400-plus yards, 4 touchdowns. He is uncoverable. He's too fast for your big guys. He's too hard to tackle for your small guys. Hands, toughness, the whole deal. And the more they get the ball to Brock Bowers, the better Georgia looks. And now we're looking at Georgia, I think, and saying, where's the challenge going to come from?
All right. We didn't get to many games I would have liked. So I have choices here. And, I could give it to LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels, who I love. 259 yards, 3 TDs in the air, 130 in a score on the ground. Leads LSU to a must win, 49-39 at Missouri. When he was out of the game, looked like Mizzou was going to win with him. Kid is unbelievable. I'm not giving it to him, though. I could give it to Oklahoma State defensive back Cameron Epps. 2 interceptions and a pick 6 in an unbelievable off-the-mat game for the Pokes against Kansas State on Friday that they absolutely needed. I'm not giving it to him. I could give it to the whole UCLA defense, which slowed down Washington State and won a game 25-17. Don't hear a lot about Bruins defense leads victory. Here we are. I could give it to Marvin Harrison Jr. maybe every week. He had 8 catches for 163 yards and a touchdown as Ohio State beat Maryland. And without him, I don't know if they beat Maryland, but I'm not. I could give it to Tez Walker, the UNC wide receiver who first defeated the NCAA in his eligibility case, then just stepped in and caught 6 passes for 43 yards. I could also give it to Northern Illinois' Ontario Brown. 13 carries for 280 yards and 4 touchdowns. He scored from 66, 58, 50, and 46.
Wow.
I think I'm going to give it to him. I'll save my other one.
I was getting tired of waiting to see where you were going. So that's
I was too.
I like that.
13 carries, 280. Nice day, Ontario. Absolutely dominated as Northern Illinois won. So I'll give it to him. That's it. All right. We've said a lot of mean things, particularly about Mario Neal the ball and other highly paid coaches out there. Can we say something nice? Can we say something nice? Pat, Ross, either of you?
Mm-hmm. I can.
Okay, Pat, say something nice.
Well, coming into this season, the over-under for total victories set by Vegas for this team was 3.5. And in game 6, they overed that halfway through the season. That team is Colorado. And for once, we didn't spend all week talking about Colorado. They'd lost 2 in a row, slipped out of the spotlight a bit. They were playing on the Pac-12 network, so not everybody's, you know, tuned in to see what Deion is wearing and who's on the sideline and blah, 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 blah. Well, they won a game, not impressively. Gave up a late tying touchdown to Arizona State, but then Shedeur Sanders did what he does. At the end, leads a drive for a winning field goal. Colorado is 4-2. Its only 2 losses are to undefeated teams. And there's a lot of people still out there that do not want to give Colorado any credit. I'm not saying they're a great team. I'm not sure they're even a good a team, but they're further down the road than people thought they were going to be. 2 wins from bowl eligibility, which I think that would have been a heck of an accomplishment in a vacuum before this season started. And they are getting it done in a way that I think a lot of us didn't foresee. So Colorado, 4-2. Hell yeah, I'm going to say something nice about you.
Did you see when Alejandro Mata kicked the field goal to win the game? And he does a very brief, he starts doing this little dance. where's he from? He is from,
I believe he's from Honduras via Mexico, via Brazil.
Yeah, he had this, like, it looked like all 3 dances were in there. He had this nice little dance. Then he stopped doing it. And he's coming off the field, and Coach Prime comes out and pushes him back out and says, finish your celebration dance. Finish your celebration dance. Give me my theme music. Ross, say something nice.
I'm going to say something nice about the ACC. We entered the season, I think, there are 3 leagues right now with 3 undefeated teams. The Big Ten, which I think is not a surprise, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State. The Pac-12, which I think coming into the season, most would have maybe expected them maybe not to have the season they've been having, which has been incredible, but have a good season, and that's USC, Oregon, and Washington. But I don't think a whole lot of people thought right now that we would have 3 ACC teams undefeated. Louisville, Florida State in North Carolina, and hey, Duke in Miami, we're very close. Miami's case, a kneel down. Duke one play, basically against Notre Dame, from being also undefeated. So my say something nice is the ACC, which has kind of taken it on the chin over the years, especially against the SEC in their games they play against one another. And there's just been a lot of talk over the last year, even from ACC teams, right, in the league's kind of financial situation. So a lot of negativity surrounding the ACC over the last few months. But right now the conference looks like they're rolling. And also those 3 teams, Louisville, Florida State, and North Carolina, do not play one another in the regular season, which is quite fascinating, right? It's unlikely, but we could have 3 undefeated teams and only 2 get into the championship game.
All right. I'm going to say something nice about Craig Bohl and the Wyoming Cowboys. They defeat Fresno State on Saturday night, 24-19. The game was on Fox. Hard hitting game. This is classic Wyoming. Andrew Peasley is just a really fun quarterback to watch. Harrison Whaley, we hope he is not too injured. Great running back. The defense stepped up. There's a great crowd there. probably almost 30,000 in a state with there's 550,000 people spread over a massive area. Like 5% of the 6% of the state is at the game. Welcome to Laradice. They are 5-1. They beat a really good Fresno team that I thought would maybe be able to get that done. They've had two national television games on network TV, a Fox and a CBS. They win them both. Craig Bohl, the roster is incredible. You look at it, you're like, where'd this guy get? They got more transfers than a bus station up there. They just like, I mean, they got like a wide receiver from Holy Cross. They got guys from all over the place.
Wow.
They
compare
just
Worcester and Laramie.
Yeah, right. I was at the small Catholic school in Massachusetts. Now I'm in Laramie. Whatever. It's working. He's an incredible coach. He was a great coach at North Dakota State. Really built that program up and won three consecutive national titles. And went to Wyoming, which is a hard place to win. They're always good. This year they're a little better than good. It's a great scene. It looks like they're not going to win the national championship. They lost to Texas and all that. I don't know if anyone's having more fun than Wyoming fans this year, though. Like they're just having celebrations every week. They got a huge game next week against Air Force, making the Mountain West very interesting. But that's a really good Fresno team. That was a really good football game on Fox. I don't know how many people watched based on the other things, but that's great promotion for the University of Wyoming. It's my second time I've said something nice, I think, about these guys. I'm really enjoying the Wyoming program this year.
The 57 people in the state and the 4,000 pronghorn antelope are all very happy with
you. Very, very happy. It's amazing. It's a great scene up there. Great scene up there. Anyway, congratulations, Wyoming. All right, that is our show. We missed a million things, but what are you going to do? We'll be back Tuesday to get to more of it and point ahead to next week and all the absurdity. A bunch of interesting games are shaping up. Please stick with us. Continue to listen. Tell your friends about us. Subscribe, and we will talk to you later.